You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. It is Thursday, August the 15th. Let's stop beating around the bush on this mayoral race in Tucson, Arizona. Three Democrats seek the Democratic nomination for mayor of Tucson. Steve Farley, 12-year veteran of the legislature, 12-year veteran of Ward 1 Council, Raheem Romero, and then, of course, Randy Dorman is running. She's a businesswoman from downtown. Make no mistake, if Raheem Romero is nominated and then eventually elected mayor of this town, you can turn out the lights. It's going to be a disaster, an absolute disaster. You might as well take a cutout of Raul Grijalva, who her husband works for, and put it at City Hall and let him run the thing, because that's just exactly who's going to be in charge of our City Hall. This is an absolute mistake to vote for Raheem Romero for mayor of our town. We'll be talking with Jim Nensel, the editor of The Weekly, about the politics of Southern Arizona and the Tucson election. David Safir will be with us. He's an education expert and an education writer for The Weekly. Steve Lenz, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, talks about the politics of 2019 in our town. Jesse Lugo and former State Senator Luis Gonzalez take on the Romero campaign. And then David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute talks about Israel and the Israeli government barring two U.S. congresswomen from apparently going to Israel. Amazing. Let's talk to Jim Nensel, editor of The Weekly. Hi, Jim. Welcome to our show.
Hey, John. How are you today?
I'm a little fired up. Fired up and ready to go. Tell me about how you think this election is going to come out in the three-way primary for the Democratic nomination for mayor. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think it's going to be cited by the folks who have not yet returned their ballots.
Really?
A lot of folks have already voted. They knew who they were going to vote for right off the bat. From what I had heard, this race was kind of knotted up with 30% going for Raheena and 30% going for Steve and about 10% going for Randy. But that was a few weeks ago, and I'm sure things have changed since then. But, you know, what it really is going to come down to, I think, and I've been saying this for a while, is how well each candidate targets the voters that are going to likely support them and gets them to send their ballots back in. I gotta say, it's really remarkable watching this race sort of descend into a battle that's being fought by a lot of third parties, John. We haven't really seen anything like this in Tucson politics. Every now and then you had like an independent expenditure committee emerge in a Tucson mayoral race. You know, way back when in 99, 20 years ago, the last time we had a contested Democratic primary and a Republican ended up winning the race, Bob Walkup. You had old Steve Emmerine. You and I both remember Steve well, the former newspaper man and county assessor, who kind of waded into the race and formed an independent campaign committee and supported Bob Walkup with a Democrats for Walkup campaign. But other than that, you know, you haven't seen, and I don't even think that effort came anywhere near what we're seeing now with these outside organizations, these independent expenditure committees, all buying up mailers, collecting money, sending it out, and really creating some pretty bizarre narratives. I got to say, the notion that Raheena Romero is, you know, a Trump supporter or is somehow supporting Trump's agenda is a little ridiculous. The idea that Steve Farley voted against education bills that were good bills for the state is also ridiculous. And so you really do have outrageous claims being made by political actors who are not revealing who they are in many cases and who are kind of drowning out the actual candidates. So it's kind of getting pretty tense out there, I would
say. By the way, this money that was thrown into the race from that third party supporting Raheena Romero was historic. I don't recall in any city election that I've ever watched over 50 years anybody throwing $250,000 or even $330,000 into a race. This is just amazing. It never happened before.
For sure. And then we have this other campaign being run by our old friends, Luis Gonzalez and Jesse Lugo. I think you're going to have them on in a little while. And we're learning that there's from the Tucson Sentinel had a report today that suggested that the folks who are contributing to that are pretty close to our friend Bruce Ash. And the notion that, Bruce suddenly has an interest in who's the mayor and all the rest of that in a Democratic primary. I just think it's pretty fascinating to watch these charges and countercharges flying, and you know we are going to see exactly how much impact all of this stuff has. You know, one of the things Rahina has done is talked about how she's the only one participating in the city's matching funds program. But at this point, it seems to me the matching funds program is becoming something of a joke with all these independent expenditures out there, which are just pouring so much money into the race.
Well said. Let's take down the pages of the Weekly and put them on radio. Really some interesting articles this week. Tim Fuller's got a photo opportunity. How going to Woodstock changed my life. Interesting article.
Yeah, it's the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, and I don't know if you know Tim or not, John, but he's been a photographer in this town, you know, for close to half a century, really. And he tells a very funny story. Number one, he was kind enough to reach out and offer us these shots from Woodstock that he took a half century ago, and they're beautiful photography. We got Jimi Hendrix there on the cover, and some shots of what it was like to be there. And he tells the story of how he arrived at Woodstock and decided he wanted to go, but he couldn't get a ticket and managed to finagle himself a press badge and got back there as a teenager or in his early 20s. I'm not quite sure where he was, but he took these photographs, never actually got them published anywhere, but had them in his portfolio, and he happened to be hanging out at the Wildcat offices, the student paper back then, and someone from the Citizen happened to be in there, and he saw the photos, and he told them at the Wildcat to hire him, and from there he went on to intern as a Tucson Citizen, and he's just been, he takes all the photos for, you know, Arizona Theater Company and Invisible Theater and a whole bunch of arts organizations here in town. He's a super nice guy on the board over at the Loft, and has made a living, you know, through photography. And so we're delighted to actually have the opportunity to run these photos and as well as his pretty funny story about how he got them.
I want to take some exception with the author of your Don't Smoke the Toad, Kathleen Nunes. Is that how you pronounce her last name?
Kathleen Coons, yes. Yes.
By the way, right. One of those damn frogs killed my fox terrier about 15 years ago and never got over it. I mean, those poisoned pallets on the top of them, on their backs, is lethal. And this dog of ours died a horrible death. I mean, a horrible death. And we, you know, $3,000 later and 6 hours of suffering, the dog finally died. But your dog will go after these toads, and your dog will die if he gets a mouthful of this poison. I don't care whether people smoke it or whatever, but it's lethal to your dog. You got to be very careful around these toads and be sure. When I go out with our golden retriever every night and every morning, I'll walk in front of him. I survey every foot of ground. It's a dangerous thing. It really is.
Yeah, and they come out this time of the year. And the thing is, John, not only are they dangerous to dogs, but if you squeeze a little of that poison out of them and you dry it out and you smoke it,
oh God,
you have this hallucinogenic trip.
Yeah. Similar to this radio show.
Out there who are interested in that experience, and they're gathering these toads, and it's not good for the toad. And I get that you're not a fan of the toad.
I'd kill every one of them. I tell you that what happened. I was living on the west side of town. Came home one night, and there was like six or seven in the swimming pool because it was lighted, and that attracted them. We had three dogs in the backyard, but only the terrier went after the toad. And you tried to wash out the poison from the mouth of the dog. That didn't work. You run to the emergency vet clinic, and they work on the dog for hour after hour after hour, and then they come back and say, here's $3,000 you owe us, your dog's dead. I mean, you really can't recover from that poison. It's just so toxic. And, I don't care how much you love your dog, your dog's going to die if it gets one of those toads. And people should know that, you know. These are lethal.
They should know that. And they should also know that they shouldn't be extracting the venom.
Sure, to smoke? I mean, really? If it'll kill your dog, it'll get you high? Come on.
Yes, very high. Very hallucinogenic. It'll send you on a trip.
It's like that's acid or mushroom. I'm already on a trip.
It's not like smoking weed. It's a whole different thing, man. Right. You're going to be checking out for a while.
Well, Danahy didn't mix any words about Trump, did he?
No. He talks about how it's really time for this whole demonization of people with dark skin to end, and that the administration needs to ratchet back on what has been. I mean, I don't. But let me be clear that I doubt that the president will be taking advice from Tom Downey on this subject.
Oh,
but nonetheless, you know, Tom has a very dark-skinned daughter and a white-skinned son, and he talks about the different treatments that they are getting and his own concern about, you know, the way this rhetoric is going in this country. And, you know, it's a good column. Another good column from Tom.
Yeah, you know, my daughter, my older daughter, married an African-American, and I used to watch them walk into restaurants and people would mutter and point, and not all people, just a few. And I thought, what is this ever going to change? Is this ever going to change? And, of course, we have the most beautiful granddaughter that ever lives, kind of. She's not mulatto, but she's more white than black. Her hair is all very black. But the simple truth of the matter is she's a great, wonderful child, the most perfect child beyond your daughters, I might add, that you would ever find in your life. You know, these young ladies that become your daughters are just so special, just like your daughters. I saw them on Facebook. I went, oh, my gosh, this is the cutest kid in the world, your daughter. But I've watched Genevieve grow up. She goes to school at Colorado College and Colorado Springs. She will be studying in Italy this summer. We just love her so much. She's so bright. She's so beautiful. And people would make fun of her with her black father walking into a restaurant. They don't even know her. They don't have any knowledge of her. And they would do that.
It's so awful, John. And you're right. When is this going to change? And it appears as though maybe it's getting worse these days.
It is.
Seem to have a license to go out there and discriminate. Or maybe it's just allowing people to show what they really are. And we learn a lot about some people in our community, and it's sad to see. And maybe they just feel it's socially acceptable to do some of the things they do and say these days. But it's gross. And I certainly hope that as my children grow up and your grandchildren grow up, that we are going to see a different feeling towards people and a much more open one, and that this whole notion of white superiority is fading away in our society. But clearly, it's not going without a fight.
Well, more pronounced now than ever before. I asked Genevieve about what was happening on her college campus, which is mostly white and very affluent white students. In fact, Liz Cheney is one of their great alumni from Colorado State College. So I don't know whether that tells you about that college or not, although it does have a rather remarkable racial mix at a school of only about 3,000. But she said there are people that are more willing to make fun of other people and demean them in this year than it did the year before. And I said, well, Genevieve, does that mean that the people are listening to the politics or playing off that? She said, I don't know. And I don't know the answer to that either. I hope not. Green shirt guy, before you leave, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we got green shirt guy. Yeah, of course, rocketed to fame last week after he was captured by a KVOA cameraman laughing uproariously at the Big Gulp Nazis who were at the Tucson City Council meeting to protest the Sanctuary City initiative going on the ballot, as if the council had choice in there anyway. But I think that's part of the Big Gulp Nazis' general misunderstanding of local politics. But anyway, the Big Gulp Nazis were there and got very upset with the council and made a spectacle of themselves, and it provoked just this uproarious laughter from this fellow Alex Kack who became known on Twitter as Green Shirt Guy and rocketed to viral fame. And so we invited him to write a little bit about what that was like for him and why it is he's supporting this sanctuary proposition in November. And I think it's a real interesting tale. Alex is a very funny guy. I've known him for a couple of years now. When I was doing my TV show down at Brink downtown, he was also involved with some programming and work down there, and a local stand-up comedian and a very funny guy.
Well, he can't wear anything but green now. He's got to wear green forever. You know,
I mean,
he is
green shirt
guy. He's buried in the green.
Yeah, very limited wardrobe choice. He's a terrific guy, and I was delighted to be able to get a little something from him in the paper this week.
All right, when's the skinny coming back?
You know what? It's taking a little summer vacation.
Yeah, I understand. It's sabbatical. Sabbatical for the weekly skinny.
Little recharge in my batteries.
Yeah,
I'm hoping, you know, sometime soon.
Yeah, okay.
Don't want to commit to anything.
No, of course not.
So,
you seem pretty vague.
So, you know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
It'll be back.
Yeah. I want people to grab a copy of the weekly. The reason I want them to do that is I hope that they will find it entertaining, which I always do. And I think they will find a lot of information there they can't find anywhere else, which makes them better informed. We're coming up to a very critical election, and the Weekly's done a great job of covering these city council races as well as the race for mayor. It's going to come down to the wire here in about 10 days, and I think it's going to be very close. I never thought that in the very beginning. I thought that Steve Farley would run away with it because he had such a very good early campaign, seemed well organized, seemed like he was on top of everything. Then all that big money came from outside, and it changed things dramatically.
You have two candidates that both have high name ID and you know, their own particular, constituencies. And, some of that constituency crosses over, and I'm sure some folks out there are having a little bit of trouble making up their minds between the candidates. But, we will see which one of them, you know, at the end of the day, grinds it out and targets their voters and gets them to the polls.
Jim Nensel, thank you so much for being with us. We truly appreciate it. Thank you. We're going to have one of your great friends, David Safir, talking education next. He writes for the Weekly.
Yes,
he does.
Super glad. David is super insightful, and I am always delighted when we have an opportunity to run something by him.
Good, and we're going to be running something by him next. And thank you very much, Jim Nensel. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it.
Hey, you bet. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works. We know about Mike Emery. He's run Perfection Auto Works and made it the very best auto mechanic repair location in all of Southern Arizona. But did you know they'll offer you free air conditioning belt and hose inspection, free radiator and cooling system diagnostic, and free fall trip vehicle inspection? 23 points in your car will all be checked with great detail to be sure your car is safe and running well as you take it on a fall trip. Mike Emery is an ASE Master Certified Mechanic, as all of his service people are. And by the way, home of the trusted auto repair for almost 20 years. He specializes in European cars, Japanese cars, and trucks. And you can find Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly Avenue. You can call Mike Emery at 323-8650. You know, there's a lot of options when it comes to repairing your car, your family car. And I hope you'll choose Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works. He's honest, he's fair, he's professional. He will fix your car right the first time. I'm John C. Scott, and I trust Mike Emery to repair your family car as well as mine. Back in a moment. By the way, if you don't listen to Steve Rivera's Eye on the Ball, which is a great local talk sports show, you really missed something. I mean, not only the great history that Steve Rivera has following the Wildcats for three decades and more, and have attended, I think he's attended 20 Final Fours. I mean, I made one Final Four, national championship, 1957, world champion of the Wild, and the Jayhawks of Kansas against North Carolina. Now, one Final Four for me, but 20-some Final Fours for Steve Rivera. It's a great local sports talk show, the best in the country, and it's on after we are at 5 o'clock. Let me talk with David Safir, who is an education expert. He taught at school for a long, long time. He's been in the classroom, understands education. David, let me ask you this. The whole idea that we believe, you and I have believed, and we've talked about many times, of a conservative right-wing group of the Arizona legislature attempting to privatize schools in Arizona. I don't think there's any question that this is their intent. And bleeding from K-12 education, public schools, the money to try to convert all of the schools, K-12 in Arizona, to privatization. Is that still continuing? And how successful have they been? And how successful will they be with a narrow margin, as they have in the House of Representatives when it comes to Republican over Democrat in 2020?
Hi, John. Yes, it's continuing. Yes, it will continue. And one thing that I talked about recently in one of my pieces on The Range, which is the online blog for Tucson Weekly, is the fact that this is part of a much, much larger national, multi-hundred-million-dollar, if not billion-dollar over the few years, push to push for privatization. And I'm going to skip away from the state legislature for a minute and look at something larger, because I've seen two recent articles that aren't about this, but about how money has influenced this country. And one is, a lot of people have heard about the Koch brothers. You put the two Koch brothers together, and their total fortune is more than Jeff Bezos and more than Bill Gates. Phenomenal amounts of money. And since the 70s, they've been putting this money, together with them and other billionaires, towards moving towards a libertarian anti-regulation agenda, which really has become a great part of our discussion here, thanks to what they've done. Well, I just read something recently that they actually brought together the first meeting in 1991 of climate change deniers.
Whoa.
This was with their Cato Institute, which is a conservative institute that they were funding. And back in 1991, George H.W. Bush was president. He believed in climate change. So did most people then, Democrats and Republicans. And these two guys who are in the oil business knows that climate change as something that's accepted is going to mean possibly carbon taxes, possibly cutting back on oil. So they were behind this from the beginning and have never stopped since. That was 1991. And here's something else. I sound like I'm going off on a tangent, but I'm really not. This was in today's New York Times about a woman by the name of Cordelia Scafee May, who is part of the huge billionaire Mellon Scafee fortune, which has been working to sponsor conservative agenda like the Kochs around the country. Well, I hadn't heard about her until today. She spent $180 million of her fortune basically beginning the modern anti-immigration movement. $180 million, founding and funding six of the most influential organizations. You take away her money, you take away her $180 million, and most probably there's no room for a Donald Trump and his racist, white supremacist agenda that he's coming up with. She and these groups who she started sowed the seeds for people like him. Well, now I'm going to come back to education. If we just look at one group, the Walton Family Foundation, the Waltons are the ones who own Walmart, and Walmart has been much in the news lately because of the shootings in El Paso. They also are hugely wealthy. You know, they're three of them together, I think, maybe even are worth more than the Koch brothers. Well, every year they plow $190 million, and I'm not exaggerating there, $190 million a year into supporting privatization that you're talking about. There's a group, a private group in Arizona called the Arizona Charter Schools Association. Half of their operating budget every year comes from the Walton Family Foundation. $1.5 million just dropped on them, half of what they spend to promote charter schools. And I'm not saying anything negative about charter schools here, but they have a phenomenal public relations advertising campaign that's been going on for years to make them sound better than public schools, which there is no evidence of when you match up kids head for head, similar kids in the district schools and in the charter schools, for that matter, in the private schools. There's not really much difference in it. You know, it's kind of the difference where one guy is 6 foot and another guy is 6 foot and one quarter. You could say one is taller than the other, but I'm sorry, a quarter inch doesn't matter. The difference between all these types of schools is not significant enough to matter, and yet these groups of people, and the Walton family is only one of the groups doing this, put so much money in it that we believe it. Now, Arizona is ground zero for the privatization movement. The three places that are ground zero are Arizona, Florida, and Texas. And the three states leapfrog over one another with their vouchers and with their charter schools and with the state testing and all these things which are part of the conservative education reform privatization agenda. So coming back, Doug Ducey is not going to stop his push for vouchers. As a matter of fact, that he's said at a Koch brothers confab where they all got together, I think it was in Indian Wells, he said, I support you guys, and I'm so happy that you guys support me, and vouchers is one of the number one agendas in Arizona. And that's Ducey, who likes to call himself the education governor and pretends that he is for public education. In fact, he and the rest of the Republican establishment will do whatever they can to lower the amount of money going to district schools and to promote all of these vouchers, which they try to increase the funding every year, and promote charter schools in any way they possibly can as well, and make district schools kind of the last resort.
Well, David, we've watched this happen, you and me, as the legislature of Arizona and its conservative leadership has bled K through 12 education to make it so anemic that it can't be successful. And the only thing that I think has changed this, and it did change it dramatically, is teachers finally had had enough, and they marched in mass over 50, maybe 70,000 strong to the front lawn of the governor and demanded a higher amount of salary for each and every one of them. They got it, not what was promised, but got close to what, well, maybe not even close to what was promised, but more money. And the school still did not recover what had been taken from them over almost a 20-year period. Still anemic, still bleeding, and still struggling just to keep the damn roof from leaking and students in the classroom. And that's where we are.
I should say that the teacher salary, for all the fact that it has improved, is still amongst the lowest in the country, either 48th, 49th, or 50th in terms of the average teacher salary. We are so far behind on those issues that when Doug Ducey says, I'm going to help the teachers, and brings it up from, we've talked about this a number of times, where he said the most we can give them is a 1% raise, then he saw 50,000 people outside of his window in the governor's office and decided, well, maybe we got to go 20% over 3 years, but it'll only be for the teachers, not for the people who are certified outside of the classroom. And it'll be 20% based on this year's economics, not figuring in inflation. And so it really isn't 20%, and the districts haven't been able to give their teachers 20% except by taking money out of capital funding, which they desperately need. And I just interviewed Layla Counts, who's the most recent board member on the TUSD board, and a wonderful woman and very, very knowledgeable about education. She teaches it. It's her field in psychology and education. She told me, and I had to check with her twice before I put this online, and I'm going to put it online tonight or tomorrow, her interview, that the HVAC systems in the school, in TUSD schools, that's the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, she says that it's $250 million behind in maintenance. $250 million. I said, you're kidding. $250 million? She says, I checked with the superintendent to make sure I got it right. She said, I only told you that because I was so astounded. One little thing, not so little in Tucson when it's 110 degrees and those kids are in those buildings, but one little part of maintenance, not buses, not electrical, not plumbing, not the roofs, just HVAC, she said it would take $250 million to bring it up to snuff where it should be. That's how far behind we are right now.
Well, and it's probably not energy efficient either. I mean, we've come so far when it comes to air conditioning efficiency that we're probably still back in the dark ages paying an electric bill that might be two, three times what we need to pay, worried to have a system that would be energy efficient. I don't know that, but I assume that.
No, I assume that, too. I know I replaced my air conditioner a while back, and it was a higher rating, and I get more bang for less electric bucks. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Right.
So, by the way, one thing I want to say about TUSD, and that is the sound that I've heard this year, which is nothing. And I love the sound of nothing. I haven't heard any problems about any of the air conditioning conking out. One year there was like a flooding of the football field. I haven't heard about that. There haven't been any kind of minor fires. I haven't heard about vandalism. And boy, the sound of silence is so lovely at the beginning of school, because when we hear all these things, what we forget about is there are something like, 42 or 44,000 students in classes with 2,000 teachers, and each one of those teachers is trying his or her damnedest to to give the students the education they need. They're not those five members of the school board who the students are seeing. The students aren't seeing the superintendent, and they're not going to the administration building. They're walking into a school. They're walking into a classroom. In best situation, they're being greeted by a smiling teacher who has their best interests at heart and crossing his or her fingers and hoping they can do what's necessary, spending their own money. You know, they're underpaid, and they're spending hundreds of dollars of their own money because they want their classroom to be good, and these kids don't even have enough paper from the school, so they buy their own paper and markers. That's what's really going on in the district, and we get distracted by the noise from the school board and the noise from problems with maintenance or horrible vandalism that happens in the school. But this is what's wonderful about this. I've lived all my life with teachers, and I know that teachers really are a benevolent group of people who are trying their best and their hardest to do what's best for those kids in the classroom. Because it's terrible to live in a classroom where things aren't working well. You desperately want them to flow well, and it takes a lot of hard work to do it.
Two very quick things. There was apparently an opportunity for somebody to do something very creative, and that is to hire somebody to walk the halls to see if there was a fire because the fire alarm system didn't work at one of the schools.
Oh, no.
I've never even heard of that situation before.
No.
But they actually hired somebody to go look for a fire for the 16 hours that the school was open because the fire alarm didn't work. If you find the fire, yell, fire.
You're supposed to have money to be able to take care of that and make sure the roof doesn't leak during the summer and all those things. John, it's really a pleasure to see things moving a little bit more nicely. Now, I'm going to give you a fingers-crossed figure that I got from Layla Counts. She said that over the summer, there were 10,000 new enrollments in TUSD.
Wow.
And my eyebrows went up. You and I have been talking about the loss of students.
Sure.
And that may not matter because during the first 20 or 30 days, nobody knows what's going on. The students are coming, they're going, new ones are registering. Other kids who registered are leaving for other districts or maybe charter schools or maybe private schools, who knows what. And all those things are in flux. We won't know for about a month about that, and we won't have it settled down until the 100th day, which is about halfway through when the important reporting comes. But I would love to believe that what Layla Counts told me about those new students means we're either going to get somewhere near break-even, as opposed to losing 800 to 1,000 students a year, or maybe even add a couple. That would be so wonderful to hear that situation turning around.
David Sevier.
Bless you, John.
Well, I get choked up every time I talk with you. I'm so thankful that you could join us today. I appreciate that very much. I have no idea what's going on with this cough, but it's killing me. Listen, thank you so much.
Commercial.
We'll take care of that during the break. David, thanks again for all your research, for your hard work, and for your publication of so much information that's so necessary about where we are trying to educate this next generation. Thank you, David, very, very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, John, for having me on.
You bet. We apologize for coughing. Didn't mean to do that in your ear. Steve Lynn's coming up next. He's the civic leader, member of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We have much to talk about with Steve Lynn. I have many questions that I need answered, and he will obviously give them to me after these messages. Steve Lynn has been one of the most respected civic leaders in our town. He has made a huge difference in what kind of community we live in. He's with the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and so many other organizations. He has joined us from time to time to comment on where we are politically in our town. He does so again today. Here's Steve Lynn. Steve, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Good to be with you.
You know, I just think that this three-way race for the Democratic nomination for mayor really is important because I think there is a difference between Raheena Romero and Steve Farley. I think if you elect Raheena Romero, you're going to have a real problem trying to convince the business community that she's on their side. And any kind of direction she might offer might not be enough to satisfy what I think is a need for leadership for the business community from City Hall. Is there a difference between these three, or do I just perceive it differently than some?
Well, if you look at the endorsements that have been garnered already, you can see that business organizations have shied away from endorsing Raheena. Even business people who've been around for a long time, I mean, they understand that the mayor of the city is, if nothing else, a cheerleader for the city and needs to be someone who is friendly to responsible growth to growth that is good for the community. It's no longer the case that we're having these conversations about whether or not to grow. We know that growth is inevitable, but what we do want to do is grow smart. We want to grow with an ecological bent in mind, but we want to be able to attract the kinds of jobs that our daughters and sons and granddaughters and grandsons can take and earn a good living. And so good economic development and good growth is something that we want to be able to do. The mayor plays a key role in that, and I think you will look to some of the candidates who would be better at that than others.
Well, I think that there's been an accommodation to the business community from the city manager, Mike Ortega. I think that's why he's been so successful in moving the council forward with some progressive ideas that do benefit business. I hope that I'm right about that. I've known Mike Ortega since he was appointed, not long, but I've known no city manager that is as accomplished as he has been. I think most people feel that way about him.
We've had that conversation before, John, and I will tell you, having either worked for, when I worked for the city of Tucson for 13 years, or observed other city managers that the city has had over a long period of time, and I'm talking about going way back to the 60s, Mike is probably the best we've had and understands how to run a municipal corporation the way a municipal corporation should be run.
Well, I just don't want this city council to go back to the bickering days of not in my backyard and battling over every street corner and every city block as we try to progress. Finally, I think people around the University of Arizona realized this institution of higher learning became an enormous number of students that had to have accommodations. They had to have a place to sleep. And we finally agreed they ought to sleep closer to the university classroom than they were sleeping here. And I think finally the people around WUNA, West University Neighborhood Association, realized we've got to be a partner in this growth and get the best out of it rather than the worst and still meet the demands of a growing university. And that finally happened, didn't it?
It did. And the university continues to work with neighborhoods in a productive way. I think you will see when the Honors College opens at the university north of Speedway that's another interaction with a neighborhood group that is going to benefit both. The neighborhood will be fine with the development, and the university will have one of the premier honors colleges that exist in the country.
Well, and it's really reality of a city that needs to grow. And of course, when you see a university approaching 30,000-40,000 students, you realize this community must accommodate this university, as the university must accommodate the demands of a city. And they must do so hand in hand. And that's been a pretty good working relationship between the Marshall Foundation and the city of Tucson and key pieces of land and development and really the investment in development for housing for the University of Arizona. It's been unbelievable to watch this after watching the war between West University Neighborhood Association, WUNA, during the Volge mayoral years, and the community. And the business community has changed dramatically.
It has. And a number of things have made that better, not the least of which is the light rail system, the modern streetcar route.
Oh, yes,
route.
I agree.
That development along that route, in now private sector development without city assistance in the billions of dollars, because that route starts in downtown, actually starts on the west side, goes through downtown, and winds up at the Health Sciences Center at the University of Arizona. That continues to be a magnet for development, and it will continue to do that as long as that route exists.
And there was even a debate of whether that should ever happen or not. And finally, people realized that it must happen, and it did, and it's been beneficial to all parties concerned. And we're going to face those decisions over and over again. We want a mayor that actually can accommodate those needs for growth and realize they have to be responsible. But to fight them and to be bitter over them and to argue over them and each particular possibility, as was the Grand Canyon University, I think that's where we're headed with Raina Romero rather than Steve Farley. But people are going to have to make up their own minds about this. But I do believe there's a lot at stake in the city election. Don't you agree?
I do. I do. And I think Mayor Rothschild has done a terrific job of making sure that the city council has been doing its work diligently and quietly so that the kinds of rancor that you saw years ago before our current city manager was in place has all but disappeared. And it's been great for the city because of that.
When you take a look at economic development in Tucson, what more can we do? And you've been involved in this all your life. That's been really a part of your job description in almost every job you've had. What more can we do to bring better jobs, higher paying jobs to this community, which has always been one of the objectives of, I think, everybody that's ever run for city council or for the mayor's office?
Well, if you look at development across the country, John, it seems as though developers are chasing younger workers, millennials, and people who will come after the millennial generation. And if you think about the ways in which those cohorts of now workers and future workers want to exist, there's a real shift away from the way baby boomers and other generations have gone about their lives. Those folks actually will change careers a number of times during their lifetime, not just change jobs, but change careers. And so they will test certain things. They will work for certain periods of time in a job that they might think is appropriate for them, and then try something else. That means that you've got to have in your community multiple opportunities for people to move from job to job, or they will move from job to another community to get a job. The other thing that we know is that until very, very recently, and I think it's still the case, about half of the graduates at the University of Arizona leave the community to find work, and that needs to be reversed as well. We have got to be able to move the graduating class from the University of Arizona to well-paying career-type work in the community so that they feel good about staying here and we feel good about having them be part of the economic engine.
We're talking with Steve Lynn, Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He's one of our civic leaders, and we're so much better off as a community because he is. If we had this conversation 20 years ago, we wouldn't be talking about billions of dollars of trade with Mexico. That's what we've been talking about, literally for the last 5-10 years. It's become more important every single year. But now we have a border war. We have children separated from their parents. We have walls going up and razor wire on the wall. We have a completely different dynamic than trying to reach hand across the border for more relationships and business. We cannot afford, and maybe you can emphasize this better than me, we cannot afford to lose this relationship with Mexico. They're our greatest trading partner, and they pump billions into our economy. Without it, I don't even know how it exists in our great future. Do you?
No, and we have to do everything we can to make sure that we can maintain that relationship. Anything that the governor does in relationship to his relationship with the governor of Sonora in particular, who's a terrific individual, as I understand it. I've not met her, but everyone who knows her thinks that she's wonderful. And they do have a good relationship. And that relationship has to outweigh the national problems that we have at the border, which seem not to ever be fixed. I'm not sure that we're going to have any sort of comprehensive immigration fix in anytime soon. The Congress just seems not willing and not able to put something together that works. And while this becomes an ongoing situation, they're distracted by a whole lot of other things that demand their attention, like gun violence and trade wars outside the United States, and a number of other things that, as we've now seen in the last couple of days, may portend another recession in this country, which wouldn't be good for anybody, because it means that the job market will shrink, that people will become defensive, and spending will go down. And that's why people are now clamoring for some sort of a stimulus package on infrastructure that will take the place of some of the growth that a recession would eliminate.
Yeah, I think we've moved the needle from possible to probable for this recession, which is not good at all. And there has to be leadership on the national level to make it as less painful as possible. I don't know whether that leadership's there or in place, but this could be another devastating hit on our lifestyle, and after what we all went through in 2007, 8, and 9, and believe me, that just devastated businesses, including mine and everybody else's that I don't think anybody's ever totally recovered from, although we've had a remarkable economy since 5 years ago. But I think a recession now would be a huge setback for us. I think everybody agrees on that. How close to a recession do you think we're coming to, Steve Lynn?
Really hard to tell. I think the signals from this week, which have been precursors of every recession in modern times, are worrisome. But depending on what the stock market can do to recover and what the bond market does with respect to long-term interest rates versus short-term, where we've had an inversion this week, but if that can be corrected, we may be able to avoid a recession. Clearly, we've got a correction in the market, and that's going to happen periodically no matter what. But I don't pretend to be any sort of a financial genius. I just watch the market as an investor like everybody else. I think we could go either way. I think it will depend on what comes out of Washington in the way of signals with respect to a trade war, with respect to our relationship both with Mexico and with China. And I think we're going to have to watch it very closely because this has been a long, slow recovery. It could have been longer if we had kept it slow. But anytime you change policy in the middle of an economy, you have the potential impact that it's going to veer off course.
Then you throw the 2020 elections into the mix, and you don't know what you're going to get. It's going to be amazing to watch this. Steve Lynn, thanks so much for being a part of our show today and for being a part of Tucson.
Thank you, John. It's always good to be with you.
Thank you. Steve Lynn, Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Coming up next, Jesse Lugo and former state senator Luis Gonzalez take on Raina Romero, the Ward 1 councilperson who seeks to be the Democratic nominee for mayor. There is a difference between these three candidates seeking the Democratic nomination. We'll try to define that difference with Jesse Lugo and Luis Gonzalez after the news. This news and this show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works. Complete auto repair, foreign and domestic. Free air conditioning belt and hose inspection. It's free. They don't charge you for that. Free radiator and cooling system diagnostics. They don't charge you for that. Free trip vehicle inspection. If you're going away, you want to know whether your car is going to be safe, it's free to find out. Specializing in European cars, Japanese, and trucks. This is Perfection Auto Works. This is Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call him at 323-8650. This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works. Back after the news.